The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service and the Associated Press. Our first article was published by the Religion News Service and entitled, After Vote to Repeal LGBTQ Bans, Many Gay Methodists Are Now Fully Out. Published on May the 6th and written by Yonat Shimran, Durham, North Carolina. On the same day that United Methodist delegates voted to repeal their denomination's condemnation of homosexuality from its rulebook, the Reverend Charles Daly drove a big hulking church bus to the Charlotte Convention Center with a handful of church members in tow. Maneuvering the bus into a parking lot that Thursday was tricky. The bus was too tall to clear the overhang at the entrance to one lot, and he had to carefully back out, allow his passengers to step off, and search for another lot. The end run appeared in his Sunday, May the 5th sermon at Epworth United Methodist Church, a suburban congregation in Durham, as a metaphor for his denomination's predicament. After an unbelievable amount of moving traffic and backing and forthing, finally, the General Conference of the United Methodist Church was pulling around and driving out of a place that it had been stuck for 52 years, he told his congregation. The big bus of the denomination is now free from the alley that it backed itself into. In Charlotte, members of Epworth United Methodist watch history being made when their denomination repealed a declaration that said the practice of homosexuality was incompatible with Christian teaching. A day earlier, it also dropped a ban on the ordination of gay clergy. But for Daly, a 42-year-old gay man, the actions of his denomination carried personal symbolism, too. As the first same-sex married minister in the North Carolina Conference, or region, he was freed of the heavy burden of having to negotiate his identity in a denomination that, until last week, officially sanctioned and censured people like him. There are estimated 324 clergy, including candidates for ordination, in the United States-based United Methodist Church, who identify as LGBTQ+. Of those, about 160 are in same-sex marriages, according to the Reconciling Ministries Network, an advocacy group for LGBTQ people. These gay clergy were allowed in stealthily, as attitudes toward LGBTQ+ clergy candidates began to change among some church leaders. A lot of people who I worked with did their very best not to treat me as a special case, said Daly, but it felt like an elephant in the room sometimes. On the first Sunday after the conclusion of the denomination's general conference, many United Methodists celebrated their release from those tight and narrow spaces that had confined so many queer members and clergy. Others settled into the realization that, despite the dramatic votes to expunge all punitive measures against LGBTQ+ people, not all United Methodists were happy. Over the past 5 years, some 7,600 more traditional U.S. churches, or about 25% of all U.S. congregations, voted to leave the denomination, fearing the church was about to lift the LGBTQ+ bans. Some have remained in the pews. Just because you remove language from the Book of Discipline doesn't mean that your work is over, said the Reverend James Howell, pastor of Myers Park United Methodist Church in Charlotte, one of the state's largest United Methodist churches. There's a huge amount of work to do. Howell said he was approached by two or three people on Sunday who he described as pretty grim about the actions of delegates to the General Conference. Many in his congregation, Howell said, would be shocked to learn that the church has had at least one gay minister during every decade, going back to the 1950s, if not earlier. Daly knows this reality well. He grew up in a small North Carolina town knowing he was gay, but for most of his life, he did not discuss his sexuality with his family or his church. At 30, he enrolled and was admitted to Union Theological Seminary in New York. After graduating, the North Carolina Conference, which spans the eastern half of the state, offered him the position of licensed local pastor, a position that does not require ordination, of two small churches on the state's coast. The congregations he served were conservative, and he did not tell their members about his sexuality. Though he had good relations with church members, he lived a mostly closeted life. In 2020, he asked for a move to Epworth United Methodist Church in Durham, which 6 years earlier had become a reconciling congregation, meaning that it joined a network of Methodist churches that include people regardless of all sexual orientations. It was an associate pastor role, meaning he would not be the senior pastor, but he figured he could at least work in a more welcoming environment. He was granted the move and then invited his partner, Luke Bauman, whom he had met at seminary, to move in with him. 2 years later, he and Bauman went to the Durham courthouse and married. They later threw a reception at a church he did not name. He was up front with the church board interviewing him for ordination and told them he had married. Last year, he was formally ordained. We had a holistic review, and then the board finally decided to recommend him, said Sang-Woo Kim, who chairs the Board of Ordained Ministry for the North Carolina Conference. Daly said he was elated by the actions of the delegates at the General Conference. For the first time in nearly a decade, his sexuality is no longer an impediment to his ministry. Recently, the bishop and cabinet of the North Carolina Conference appointed Daly as senior minister to Elizabeth Street United Methodist, the church's first reconciling congregation, a post he will take up in July. Several of his congregants are sorry to see him go, but thrilled for the recognition he's finally receiving. "It's a joyous situation," said Becky Felton, 80, a member of the church who said she gained so much respect for Daly after he told the church that he had married his partner before he was formally ordained. "It's so wonderful to see the church that I love embracing the people I love." Now an article from the Associated Press that was published on May 7 and is entitled, "Pope Francis Appoints New Bishop in Tennessee After Former Bishop's Resignation Under Pressure," Knoxville, Tennessee. Pope Francis has appointed Reverend James Mark Beckman as Bishop of Knoxville, Tennessee, almost a year after the previous bishop resigned under pressure following claims he mishandled sex abuse allegations. The Vatican announced the appointment in its Tuesday noon bulletin. As is usual, the announcement made no mention of his predecessor or the circumstances under which he left the post. Bishop-elect Beckman is a priest of the Diocese of Nashville, where he has served as pastor of St. Henry Parish since 2015, according to the announcement. He earned his master's degree in religious studies from the Catholic University of Louvain in Belgium in 1989 and was ordained to the priesthood in 1990 for the Diocese of Nashville. Pope Francis accepted Bishop Richard Sticca's resignation last June, closing a turbulent chapter for the southern U.S. diocese that was marked by a remarkable revolt by some of its priests. They accused Sticca of abusing his authority during his 14 years as Bishop of Knoxville and protecting a seminarian accused of sexual misconduct. They appealed to the Vatican for merciful relief in 2021, citing their own mental health, sparking a Vatican investigation that led to Sticca's resignation. In media interviews, Sticca strongly defended his actions and his leadership, saying he worked to bring unity in the diocese. Now an article from the Religion News Service published on May the 3rd and written by Adele M. Banks. Churches tied to civil rights awarded National Park Service preservation funds. Six churches are among 39 projects being awarded grants from the National Park Service to preserve historical examples of the civil rights activism of African Americans. The recipients of the $23.4 million in awards include the Historic Tabernacle Baptist Church, Selma A.L. Legacy Foundation. The foundation will receive $744,545,000 to help protect the interior of the building and enhance its air quality. The church was the site of the first mass meeting for proponents of the voting rights movement and the spiritual home of several presidents of the National Baptist Convention, USA Incorporated. The Interior Department and the National Park Service are entrusted with using the power of place to tell the story of our country, Jordan Pfeiffer, a spokesperson for NPS, told the Religion News Service in a May 3rd statement. Across America's national park system and in local communities throughout our nation, NPS is working to preserve and protect historic sites across the nation that hold the physical memory of our nation's history. Since 2016, the Park Service has awarded more than $126 million for various preservation projects through the same African American Civil Rights Grants program that will aid the new awardees. Pfeiffer said that a large number of our African American Civil Rights Grants fund churches and faith-based projects, as they were such an integral part of the civil rights movement, hosting meetings, speeches, experiencing violence, and even where several marches started, like in Selma. Other church-related recipients include the Historic Campbell Chapel Restoration Project, Incorporated, which will receive $750,000 for structural damage repairs of the Historic Campbell Chapel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Americus, Georgia. This building was designed by Lewis H. Pursley, the state's first African-American registered architect, and was influential in the civil rights protest in that Georgian city. Friends of the Antioch Incorporated, which will receive $750,000 for exterior and interior repairs of the Antioch Baptist Church and Cemetery in Crawfordville, Georgia. The church was the site of voter registration drives and planning meetings for the civil rights activist. Famico's Foundation, which will receive $750,000 for rehabilitation of St. Mark's Presbyterian Church in Cleveland for use as commercial space and a community center. The church was a central meeting place for African American activists. Montana Historical Society, which will receive $497,000 for repairs to stabilize the brick exterior and increase accessibility at Union Bethel AME Church in Great Falls, Montana. It was the state's only African American church in operation when it was organized in 1890. Augusta Canal Authority, which will receive $750,000 for the rehabilitation of the Mother Trinity Christian Methodist Episcopal Church in Augusta, Georgia. It was the first and oldest church in the historically black CME denomination after enslaved and free African Americans who were worshiping at another church formed their own congregation. Other grant recipients will be using the funds for work to conserve historical sites, such as the Howard Theater, a Washington, D.C. location known for featuring black performers and prominent speakers, and Atlanta's Ashby Theater, where African Americans could watch movies without being segregated from white moviegoers and relegated to less desirable balcony seats. Other grantees will use the NPS funding to conduct historical surveys, including one in Detroit that will explore the role of religion in the struggle for equality, the Park Service said. Now an article from AP News that was published on May the 7th and written by Bruce Skipkowski. A man tried to shoot a pastor during a church service, but his gun wouldn't fire, state police say. A man who tried to shoot a pastor during a service at a Pennsylvania church because God told him to do it was thwarted when his gun didn't fire and he was tackled by a congregant, authorities said. The chaos at the Jesus Dwelling Place Church in North Braddock took place Sunday while the service was being live-streamed, state police said. Bernard J. Polite, 26, of Braddock, entered the church just after 1 p.m. and walked toward the front while the Reverend Glenn Germany was giving a sermon. The pastor told WTAE-TV in Pittsburgh that Polite smiled at him and they made eye contact just before Polite pointed the gun at him. Germany then ducked out of the way as a male congregant tackled Polite. Germany and the congregant then worked together to wrest the gun from Polite, who was soon subdued and held until state troopers arrived. Polite said, "God told me to do it," and that he planned to shoot Germany and wait to be arrested so that he could go to jail and clear his mind, according to court documents. He faces numerous charges, including aggravated assault and attempted homicide, and was being held Monday without bail at the Allegheny County Jail. State police said they didn't know if Polite had an attorney, and county court records did not list one. The body of a shooting victim was found in a home near the church, where Polite had been shortly before going to the church, county police said. The county medical examiner's office identified the body Monday as Derek Polite, 56, of North Braddock, but he did not say if he was related to Bernard Polite. Polite was not known at the church, officials said. He wandered over to the church after hearing music coming from there. "I am feeling grateful that I woke up this morning and that I am here. It could have gone an opposite direction," Germany told the Associated Press on Monday. "But God has intervened, and I am grateful for him." Our last article was published by the AP News on April 22 and is written by Maria Teresa Hernandez. Mexico's likely next president would be its first leader with a Jewish background. Mexico City. By mid-2024, Claudia Sheinbaum will most likely become Mexico's first female president. She would also be its first leader with a Jewish background in a country that's home to nearly 100 million Catholics. On June the 2nd, voters will choose a new president, 628 congressmen, and thousands of local positions, Mexico's largest election ever, according to the National Electoral Institute. Sheinbaum, a former mayor of Mexico City and the governing party's candidate, has kept a comfortable lead in all polls against opposition candidates Xochitl Galvez and Jorge Alvarez Menez. What role has religion played in the ongoing campaign that will elect the successor to President Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador? The questions are nuanced. Does Sheinbaum identify herself as Jewish? The 61-year-old candidate has approached the question with caution. While she is of Jewish ancestry, she is not religiously observant. Her four grandparents were Jews who immigrated from Lithuania and Bulgaria. She was born in Mexico City, and her parents did not raise her under any religion. According to her campaign team, Sheinbaum considers herself a woman of faith, but she is not religiously affiliated. "Being Jewish can be an identity, but not necessarily a religious one," said Tessie Schlosser, director of the Jewish Documentation and Research Center of Mexico. and Jewish identity is multifaceted, Schlosser said. It can be aligned with history, society, spirituality, geography, and ideology. Even within the same Jewish community, for example, there may be conflicting views on Zionism or genealogy. For some, if you were born to a Jewish mother, you are Jewish, Schlosser said. For others, if you're born to a father. For others, if you have a grandfather. So, even in terms of lineage or racialization, there are many debates. How big is the Mexican Jewish community, and what is its relationship with Sheinbaum? The first Jews arrived in Mexico in 1519, along with the Spanish colonization. The community began to grow substantially by the early 20th century as thousands of Jews fled from the Ottoman Empire to escape instability and anti-Semitism. To date, the Mexican Jewish community is formed by Ashkenazi Jews from Central and Eastern Europe and Sephardic Jews mainly from Turkey, Greece, Italy, Spain, and Syria. According to Renee Dayan, director of Tribuna Israelita, which serves as a link to the Central Committee of Mexico's Jewish Community, there are about 50,000 Jews in the country. The majority are settled in Mexico City and its surroundings, with small communities in the cities of Monterrey, Guadalajara, Tijuana, Cancun, San Miguel de Allende, and Los Cabos. As a general practice, the Jewish community maintains relationships with a broad range of local authorities and does not endorse any particular candidate or party, Dayan said. However, it is open to meeting with politicians who wish to discuss their proposals and recently met with Sheinbaum, Galvez, and Alvarez Menez. While welcoming the dialogue with Sheinbaum, members of the Jewish community do not consider her to be part of their ranks, in part because Sheinbaum herself has rejected any such connection. Claudia has actively tried to say, "This is not me," Schlosser said. It must be respected when a person does not want to be identified one way or another. More broadly, Schlosser said, Mexico's political world does not extend any special benefits to high-ranking politicians who represent social or religious diversity. Has Sheinbaum's Jewish identity had any impact in the electoral process? In mid-2023, former Mexican President Vicente Fox wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter, that Sheinbaum was Jewish and foreigner at the same time. That moment, denounced as anti-Semitic, racist, and xenophobic, was not isolated. Fox was responding to criticism made by another user who said that Sheinbaum was fake for using a rosary when she was Jewish. Similarly, Jewish publicist Carlos Alarzraqui said in an interview that Sheinbaum was a phony for wearing a skirt with the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe with the sole purpose of pleasing the Catholic electorate. This is not the first time that Sheinbaum has faced criticism. Since the official campaigns kicked off in March, Sheinbaum and Galvez have been questioned and second-guessed in a country where sexist prejudices still debate whether a woman is prepared to rule the second-largest economy in Latin America. So, what role does religion play ahead of June elections? Although Sheinbaum has repeatedly said that she does not practice any religion, she proudly publicized a meeting she held in February with Pope Francis and has indeed worn Catholic symbols at her rallies. Mexico is a secular state with a robust legal framework that establishes the government's separation from the church, but the Catholic presence in the country is vast. According to the latest official report, in 2020, 98 million of 126 million Mexicans are Catholics. They are followed by 14 million Protestants, mostly evangelical, and then comes the Jewish community. More than 10 million people say they have no religion, and 3 million identify as believers without religious affiliation. The relationship between the Catholic Church and Lopez Obrador has cooled since 2022, when several bishops raised alarms about the increasing levels of violence in the country. It is not clear whether the gap would be reduced with Sheinbaum as president, but during her campaign, she has agreed to meet with Catholic leaders and reluctantly signed a national commitment to peace. We are in a moment in which we can see politicians seeking validation from religious authorities, said Pauline Captivella, academic from the National Autonomous University of Mexico. We saw this before the official start of the campaign, when the two candidates presented themselves before the people. Religion's role in the current elections was apparent when thousands of people supported the presidential aspirations of Eduardo Verástegui, a right-wing activist and film producer who, although his campaign faltered, echoed the voices of conservatives rejecting abortion and LGBTQ plus rights. When Verástegui's candidacy failed, I thought that the religious issue was not going to have so much relevance in the campaign. But little by little, we have seen that it did, particularly when the Catholic Church began its program in favor of peace, Captivella said. Lopez Obrador and Sheinbaum have claimed that the number of homicides dropped during the current administration. But Catholic leaders, during nationwide forums that the church held in 2023, have echoed the fears spread among thousands of average citizens who shared how violence broke their lives. Organized crime has long controlled swaths of Mexico through violence and corruption. It has diversified beyond drug trafficking in recent years, extorting businesses big and small for protection payments. Under Lopez Obrador's Hugs Not Bullets policy, the government has avoided direct confrontation with the cartels, allowing them to essentially take control of a dozen or more mid-sized cities. And though addressing violence is unavoidable, Captivella said, the Catholic Church's actions during the campaign could also be seen as an attempt to try to recover part of the public standing it lost during Lopez Obrador's six-year term. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you'll listen again next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.